search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Broken by Concept, episode 191. So we've been meaning to do an episode on reviewing for a very long time.
We get this question asked all the time. Will you guys talk a lot about reviewing? Where do I start? What does it look like? How do I review? My DMs are probably, I get three of these probably a week from either new people from Broken by Concept.
One of the most common questions.
All people in my program.
Right. And look, we wanted to do an episode on it, and it is probably the topic that we know the most about between the two of us. We said we've probably roughly done 20,000 reviews between Jungle and Mid over the past few years.
20,000 individual games we've looked at.
And that's crazy. Not even including personal reviews. That's not including time in Back in the Day in Direwolves. Yeah. This is just purely between Soul 2 and MLA over the past
8,000 uploaded on my website.
A lot of reviews. And so, you know, when we initially were talking about this, we were going to really keep it centered around reviewing. And what we realized is you can't talk about reviewing without talking about learning. Because ultimately what reviewing is for is to learn more effectively, learn more efficiently, and actually just overall have more learning, right?
Why reviewing is important, because that's people will think, oh, come on guys, like, can I just play a game of League of Legends, you know? But people got to realize, like, this is a competitive game. There's a professional scene. People get paid a lot of money. People are trying to become professional players. You know, I always think, like, what happens if you're a, you know, diamond player here, you know, you've completely sort of, you know, sort of struggling there. You know, you're frustrated at your journey, and then you're coming up against someone in the MLA who has a review process. You know, maybe in the short term, maybe you can sometimes beat them in life, but that person's probably going to, over the long run, have much more results. Like, that's where we're getting to. That is the reality of the game.
Especially nowadays with how popular coaching is as well.
Yeah, it's getting more. And the educational content
everywhere. 100%.
Reviewing is so important.
And huge pillar.
We'll really figure it out why after this episode. Yeah, going into this episode.
So, I think it's important to note that there are many ways to view learning, many models that people use to describe learning. One of my personal favorites, and I think is a great starter to think of, I guess a model to think about learning at a high level, is these five stages of learning. Now, I'm going to be only talking about the first four stages because I think that's what's relevant and practical for us today. Now, we have mentioned this before. We'll put this up as a little graphic on the screen here. But basically, you start off at the bottom, which is we're unconsciously incompetent, right? Which basically means we don't know what we don't know. Right, this is where we don't know anything, and we have no muscle memory, essentially.
This is like your first, like, your normal games leveling up to, like, level 10, 15, 20. You got no idea what's going on.
You're not even aware of how incompetent you are, right? So that's basically, we all start there with all skills, no matter what. Now, as you start to put a little bit of time, or I guess get a little bit of learning going on, you start to realize, holy shit, yeah, I actually don't know much, but at least you're now aware of how much you don't know, how incompetent you are. So you become consciously incompetent. So you're kind of conscious about how bad you are.
Maybe it's like, for example, I always imagine someone playing like Lux. They realize that hitting Lux Q is very good. It kills people.
Yep.
And they're like, I'm just missing a bunch of Lux Qs.
Right, and you're like, okay, I need to work on this. Mm. So it means like you're kind of aware that there's work to be done, but you don't really, you're not there yet, right? So you're consciously incompetent. But then the third stage is that we become consciously incompetent to the point where, okay, we're consciously competent, which is now we can do things, but it requires a lot of our mental stack. So now we focused on it a little bit and we can do it here and there, or maybe we can do it actually pretty reliably, but it requires a lot of our focus, a lot of our attention. So again, tying this back to League, you might have, let's say you've worked on your CSing a little bit or quite a lot, and you can CS effectively, but it just takes up so much of your mental stack. And if you focus on your CS, you can't really focus on other things like trading or warding or leaning or whatever the hell it might be. And I would say this is where a lot of people get to with majority of their skills.
Absolutely.
Right? And I would say this is where a lot of people tap out. They don't go to the next level, which is the last level, which is you're unconsciously competent, where you now don't need to allocate that much of your mental stack or energy towards doing said skill competently. Right. And so I think, you know, that's where the muscle, you know, at this point, we're just talking about muscle memory, yep. right? Intuition.
This is the way I think about this is where I'm trying to get to with all aspects of my gameplay. This is end game. This is like I'm able as a jungler, clear my camps, get max information. Executing fights, I know exactly what I just, I don't even have to think. I just know exactly who my kill target is, how the fight's going to play out. This is what I'm trying to get to. And you know, even as like maybe a platinum player, you can have unconscious competence in maybe you're really good at CS. And we see plenty of people with 10 CS per minute, people like even in, you know, platinum and stuff like that nowadays. But they don't know where the jungler is on the map. They don't look at that support roam. They're not thinking about what the next objective is. They go contest right. an objective.
And you can actually get solid results in League by being unconsciously competent with maybe one
just
or
a
two.
Couple, yeah.
Just a couple of skills. And that can make up for the weaknesses you have in other areas.
I mean, for example, I mean, CSing is like economy in League of Legends is massive part of the game. Like yep. if you're really good at doing that, you're probably pretty far up on the ladder. So I guess there's some skills that if you're really unconscious competent at it, can get you pretty
more
far.
More bang for buck.
But, you know, some yep. other skills, not so much. But these are this is when we're starting to get to the diamond plus, these little 1%ers, you need to get these down.
Yeah, and look, I think this is, again, it is only a model. It doesn't give us a full picture of what entails learning and the different, many multifaceted levels of learning. But I think it's a good general overarching framework to kind of give to you guys to think about this as we go through this episode. And this is how I really like to think about learning at a very high level. So I think this is a great starting point.
Love it. All right, so we've got a starting point of a learning model. Let's now move into what makes an expert. Now, this is one of my favorite videos on the entire internet. Highly recommend you guys watching it. I'm going to quickly summarize it. This is by Veritasium, and it's literally called What Makes an Expert. The video starts off with a chess experiment that they did in 1973 where they wanted to test IQ, working memory of chess, high-level chess players. They want to be like, are they just special? They're different from the population, the general population. So what they did is they got three people, three different categories, a master, an advanced amateur, and then a beginner. And what they did, what the experiment was, is they had a chessboard, 25 pieces with positions that would look like a real game, what it would look like. And each player had 5 seconds to look at the board and then try and have another board replicate. Where was all the position? So 5 seconds, bam, you know, replicate. And they could actually go back and see it as many times as they wanted until they completed it. So the first look, the first look, these were the results. 16 pieces, first look, a master tier, it's different, like it's pretty high in chess. A master chess player was able to get 16 pieces off the bat of the 25, the first look.
Is it like sort of memorize where everything was?
Everything was.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just the first look, 5 seconds, bam, knew it. And then an advanced amateur got 8, and the beginner got 4.
Mm.
All right?
Okay.
Then they did it again, and they arranged the pieces in a way that's not replicable in a real game. Doesn't make any logical sense, right? And the results were that all of them pretty much got 3 to 4 pieces. The same, the beginner had the same sort of the working memory as the master. Fascinating, isn't it, right? Mm. Which is essentially what it's actually, they realize what it's called is chunking. So what an expert does, what we do in League is that we're only good at looking at, because we practice this muscle movement, this reviewing process thousands and thousands of times, we've seen the scenario. So we can actually look at something and instantly like create a pattern of like things. Like for example, you know, they're like the knight's getting taken here. So because the knight's getting taken there with that master, that he would view it as, well, that must be, all these pieces must be, or he doesn't have to think about that. But the amateur, the beginner doesn't even know like what a setup of that looks like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because the beginner's never, hasn't been in those scenarios enough.
So he doesn't know what that looks like.
He has no muscle memory. He has no intuition to draw back upon.
Exactly right.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas a master of chess would have been in these, or knows this situation, or roughly been in a similar situation many times before. So they could go be like, oh, okay, well, this is one of those situations where, so therefore it has to be.
That's right. It has to look like this.
Look like that.
Like they sort of broke it down where like, the master would see 3 different things happening on the board. And because of that, it was able to get like 4 pieces.
You can
each.
Draw conclusions. Yeah. So yeah, I remember we obviously covered this ages ago on an episode of the BBC, right? And I remember one of the interesting parallels we made was when, if we were to get given, and we do this in our coaching, right? We get given a game state. So here's the tab, you know, and then we can like have a pretty good idea about what's going on, how to win, what should my role be in like 5 to 10 seconds, like boom.
That's right.
Like boom, 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 boom. And that's not because, again, we have exactly been in this situation, but we've been in so many situations that are similar. It's like we'd probably look for very similar information. We'd look at, okay, objectives, boom. You'd look at kills, bounties, items. And then like you'd be able to just go connect the dots and come up with a conclusion very fast. Because I noticed this in my reviews where how long it takes people to come to this conclusion. And that makes such a big difference. If we're in a game and you see...
Yeah, I say that in a review. What's going on in this game? And they're like, they have to like look at mid and then thing and then, you know, look at top just from the mini map. And it's just so slow in a review. Imagine in a game plus all the other...
That's the muscle memory. Yeah. Yeah. And I love this because it really just shows that it's not about, you know, IQ or intelligence.
Superhuman working memory.
It's just experience.
Pattern recognition.
Pattern recognition.
Again, they call it chunking.
And League is, in my opinion, a game of pattern recognition. 100%. Because things move too fast.
That's right.
100%. I love that.
So awesome studies. That's where the video starts. Then we go into what are the four different types? What are the four major criteria that makes an expert? So, you know, we always hear about that term 10,000 hours, right? And the idea is that 10,000 hours, yeah, it's part of it, but it's not everything. These four other things are extremely important for what makes actually an expert at any skill, any craft. So the first one here is many repeated attempts with feedback. So for League of Legends, that's, you know, for a sport, anything, win, lose. Yep. I survive in this fight, I die. Really important. So that's step number one. So he used other examples to sort of compare it. Like experts, they sort of did a study on, or research on experts in fields like politics or economics. And they wanted them to predict events in the future, like elections or something that happened in this country. And overall, they did pretty terribly. Because those events happen so infrequently.
The feedback's just not there.
So even though they're experts, they find that they're actually not reliable at all because they haven't had many repeated attempts with feedback.
Right.
So the feedback is... And that's actually such a cool thing about sports and learning and League. The fact that we're able to have, you know, many repeated attempts with feedback. It's like hitting a tennis ball, you know, like again and
but
again.
But feedback's so interesting because feedback is... There's many different levels of feedback, right? You have an immediate feedback, for example, you do a trade with someone. It's like, I do this and I get this outcome. But then even big picture of the feedback, I navigated the game like this. I made these choices at a high level and I lost. You know, so there's, I feel like there's...
There is, isn't
you
it? Know what like I mean? This is my win condition. These are
yeah.
It's like the pyramid that we have, right? The stage one issues, like, you know, the micro, you know,
you're getting feedback when it comes to every stage.
Every stage, yeah, champ mastery stuff.
Even stage four, it's like, yeah. I'm going into this block with low intensity, you know? Like,
it is.
You actually are constantly getting feedback, whether or not you're aware of it, consciously or unconsciously.
And I guess that's where reviewing becomes a skill because there is so much feedback you're getting in a game, it's overwhelming.
You're just tuning in, really. That's what reviewing really is. It's tuning in and really hyper-selecting and completing the learning cycle for these specific elements, isn't it? It's like really making sure that you understand the feedback, get the feedback, understand the feedback, and then take that learning moving forward. That's really what reviewing is.
That's critical because I guess, you know, this is where it comes into play where, you know, people think, you know, they lose a game and their feedback was like, I lost. That's like how they take it.
Right.
But that's not, you're not actually.
It is. It's not.
Yeah,
it's
but
not,
like that's the only thing that they'll think about.
That's the only thing, right. It is theoretically, but it's a very poor piece. It's yeah. only one very minimal
It's like
thing,
the start, right? You know?
It's the start, yeah.
Yeah. That's flipped, but that doesn't
that's
matter.
That's fine. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It fixes itself anyway. All right. Next one here, it's number two, a valid environment. This is like a predictable environment. You know, we have one map in Summoner's Rift with minions, very structured, very valid environment. Some examples that he had was like a, you know, a roulette wheel or something, you know, in a casino. Yes, it's the same thing. It's like a roulette, but at the end of the day, it's not a valid environment because it's all random where the ball goes, right? Completely random. There was a really funny... a story he had in here where what Warren Buffett did in 2008, he bet $1 million bet and he said, anyone who can outperform me with like an investment over 10 years, you know, I'll give you $1 million, right? He's like challenged like the hedge funds and stuff like that. And all he did the most boring basic investment ever, was just did investment in the S&P 500, right? The most boring standard thing. And then all the hedge funds actually outperformed Warren Buffett in that short term, in the first 3 years, because that was like the financial crisis in the 3 years. But he had massive, over the long run, completely outperformed all the experts, all the hedge, because the market itself is still very random. And that's not to say he talks about, it's like, there is obviously professional investors, stuff like that. But again, not a valid environment, the stock market, right, in a way, because there's randomness, right? But the S&P 500, that's consistent over a long period. So that's a valid environment because that's predictable. Yeah. So valid environment, critical. That's obviously very easy for Lee because we are in a valid environment. So we tick that box. Now, the next one here is timely feedback. So we've talked about many repeated attempts with feedback, the importance of feedback. Now it's about the speed of the feedback, which we sort of covered as well. That's quite, you know, obvious, rapid feedback.
Yep.
I go for this trade, doesn't work, you know.
Rather than make a decision and then I get the feedback tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Or a week later.
Could be. I think there was like a big study in with the example he used was like, careers counselors and school and stuff like that. And like,
feedback's shocking.
Yeah, it's shocking because it's like, I think you should be good in this career, but it just takes years. So
years
what
they
found, some guy like created some like AI or some like some algorithm that like pretty much outperformed most career counselors, basically just inputting two things, their high school score and like what they were sort of interested in. You know? So like they're hopeless, the careers counselors in schools, because they don't have timely feedback.
Right.
So that's really important. Now, the last one here, which is the most important, this is, if you don't have this, couldn't care less, deliberate practice. Now, there's lots of examples he uses here, but essentially this is where it comes to, you need to get out of your comfort zone, not get comfortable. This is where you need to get to the edge of your ability. Example he uses is with driving. When you learn to drive, pretty overwhelming, you know, the first 50 hours or so, you know, struggling, overwhelming muscle memory and stuff like that. But in terms of the actual skill of driving, you pretty much like cap out, really. Mm. You know, this is like a cap. Unless you put yourself in more challenging situations, you know, car, you know, advanced, like, you know, going, what's it called? Like mountain, in the mountains. Oh, right. Like, you know, like more like challenging driving situations. Like, not just like on the road, right? So you don't actually get better at driving if you're constantly in.
And Lee does this automatically.
Yes.
Right.
With the rank system. With the rank system. Yes.
Right.
So this is why it's super dangerous. This is why
it's always in the Goldilocks zone. You're always in that Goldilocks zone of like being optimally challenged, but not to the point where you're going to give up, but to the point where you do need to get
uncomfortable. That's where you get stuck at your rank, your skill level. But this is where people get worse. So he talks about how, this is where, because if you don't have, even if you're a professional for 20 years or whatever, if you don't constantly push yourself and have deliberate practice, you actually get worse at skills.
Right. Yeah.
So this is what we always say, where if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, especially for a game like Lee, where it's always advancing, right? So this is where it's really important. Like I was watching, I'd randomly, you know, like the Kitchen Nightmares episode of Gordon Ramsay pop up, right? And there was like this restaurant that used to be super successful. It's like the best pizza in Colorado, right? And the guy, you know, he's been doing this for like 30 years or whatever, and the restaurant's, you know, absolutely failing. And you could see he just doesn't, even though he's been doing the same skill, making pizza for 30 years, because he hasn't tried to challenge himself, he hasn't actually tried to get better at making pizzas or look at new things, he's gotten significantly worse, and the pizza was, you know, Gordon Ramsay just obliterating, right? So it was good, but now he's just, you know, lost it. And this is where people get, you know, where you hear people get, you know, like they lose their touch or whatever, or they, because they just stop the deliberate practice aspect of things. They stop studying, pushing themselves. And, you know, you might be saying, okay, well, Nathan, let's say I'm a bronze player, right? And like I'm generally a bronze player, and like, you know, I'm learning league, but like I'm deliberate practice. I'm watching VODs. I'm, you know, sitting there, I'm improving. Like that person is actually improving by doing deliberate practice. But if you're a platinum player, you've been platinum for years, you go and do the same thing. You don't put any thought, no study, no reviewing. You're actually getting worse.
Right.
Right.
So I think there's two layers here, Nathan, within deliberate practice, what you're saying. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the first one you're referring to is the environment. You have to be in an environment where you're getting challenged.
You must be challenged, okay? Yes.
Whether that's...
That will look like different for everyone,
that'll look different for everyone. Whether you're artificially creating the challenge or whether or not like the challenge is naturally challenging, right? The situation is naturally challenging. Then the second layer is are you rising up to the challenge, or are you trying to avoid the challenge, if you will, right? Because like, for example, the way the rank system works is that you're always challenged. If you want to be challenged, if you just keep playing like that platinum player and he tried, he would be challenged, right? But you could also argue that, okay, well, he doesn't have to check in, if you will, and just do the bare minimum kind of check out and just kind of plateau and just rely on his underlying muscle memory is what you're saying.
Exactly
so,
right.
So in order to actually tick the box of deliberate practice, you got to put in the effort, intensity with intention to try and challenge yourself, but also make sure the environment is challenging enough for you to learn.
That's right. Let's say if you platinum player playing in bronze,
it wouldn't
again,
work.
Doesn't,
right.
you know, that's
work.
Not deliberate
And that's
practice.
Why people get worse when they smirk because yes, you're not actually dangerous. Getting challenged by the, yeah. your environment.
Exactly
100%.
Right. Same with stuff like Jiu-Jitsu and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, go watch the video. He talks about it more, but the deliberate practice yeah. aspect is so important. And it actually really sort of inspired me and sort of made me check a lot with my review process. Like, have I sort of stopped going to the edge of my ability? Like, have I, you know, for, you know,
I mean, I've already found that now. Like, because at the moment, like we well, no, at the moment, me and you have been doing a lot of effort in our below plat programs, right? And I still, you know, every now and then stream on my main. And I felt myself got worse recently, 100%. Because I haven't been playing at high level games.
That's
why
we've been so focused
games.
On the below platinum programs at the moment.
100%. I feel it. And I, you know, that statement, again, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. It's just true. I actually, again, in my own experience, I don't think I've ever felt a time where I'm just stagnated. It's always I'm either getting worse or significantly better.
That's right.
And I feel like I've gotten worse.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the sacrifice I'm making right now to put effort into doing these other things. But, you know, it's just the reality. That is the reality.
So highly recommend. We'll have the link in the description. Yeah. Go check that out.
I think a really great segue with this one, Nathan, is talking about the learning cycle. Because that's, you know, I think the learning cycle is really aligned with that whole feedback, the timely feedback loop. Because where I got inspired with this one was, I mean, look, there's the whole thing about the OODA loop, which I'll have to cover on another episode, which I got introduced from that from Jono. So the OODA loop is a model of learning with fighter pilots. I think it stemmed from fighter pilots. I'll have to dig that one. I didn't actually prepare for that. It came to my mind, but fighter pilots used a similar feedback system. But the one that really jumped out to me was the Ray Dalio one, where essentially it's a very similar process no matter what industry you're in, is you make a decision, we get some sort of outcome, there's some sort of, the outcome is the feedback, if you will. We review it, we reflect, and then we take those learnings moving forward to then try again. And it's just this constant circle. And every single time you complete that circle, we get a little bit better and we have a different hypothesis next time. And then we go up and up. And so we'll actually put an image here. He has it in his book, Principles. It like has like a little loop, and then it goes up. The arrow points up, and then you go have another loop and go up, another loop and go up. And it's just up and up and up and up.
It's like going like backwards a little bit.
Backwards a little bit and then up. Backwards a little bit and then up. And he feel like that was a great diagram representing how he's navigated his professional life, right? And I really resonate with that. And I really think that everything in League is about, and everything when it comes to skills, is completing that learning cycle in the fastest and most efficient way possible, right? And so when we review, the goal at a high level is to be like, okay, this is what I did. This is the decision I made. I made a decision with intention. Okay, well, what happened? Okay, I decided to give this dragon. Traded up for top tower. Okay, well, what happened? What was the outcome here? Did that look like a good decision? And then it's like, well, oh shit, yeah, this actually wasn't good because we needed to stack dragons this game. We've just lost our win cons. You like make an observation. There's a learning there, right? We understand that, we make sense of that learning. And it's like, okay, next time I'm in a scenario when dragons, I need to take that into account. I need to take into account how many dragons we have before I consider giving dragon. Boom. Now, the tricky thing with League is that we may not be in that scenario again. And this is where it gets very tricky. In a lot of other industries and a lot of other skills, you can complete the learning cycle and it can be very simple. It can be on guitar. Oh, I play this string. Oh, shit, I wasn't pressing the note down hard enough. Okay, I'm going to try something different and I can do it again immediately.
Completely isolated skills.
Completely isolated skills. Yeah. But in League, it's like we don't have the luxury of replicating a lot of the things in League. Now, there are things we can replicate, right? For example, I think there's certain things with trading and things in lane,
like CS,
specifically
and
in
like
the jungle as well.
Full clearing
camps
full clearing.
And stuff. There are things, but there is a lot that you cannot immediately replicate. So that doesn't mean we don't have learning, but the learning cycle isn't tight. It's not really, you're not having that second attempt, because ideally you want to complete that second attempt with the new learning that you just had, you know? So that's one of the challenges we face. But I will say, regardless of whether or not you're able to go for that second rotation around the loop, it's still the same thing. And this is why taking learning in league takes so long. So yeah, learning cycle is everything. That's really the foundation of learning and reviewing in a nutshell. And something that's the way I view learning to this day.
Yep. Well, I think does that tickle our high level stuff, Curtis, before we get now into the deep with reviewing? Get specific with league.
There is one more thing that I want to talk about before we get specific with league.
Okay.
And this is intuition and muscle memory for a second. I think it's important to talk about this. One of my breakthroughs when it comes... Okay, so I want to start high level here. When I was coaching in Direwolves, I didn't really understand learning at all, right? I didn't really understand it.
The mindset
was... I had no idea.
Throw enough shit at a wall, eventually it sticks. That's sort of what we all
did. And it kind of did, but I didn't understand why. Like, I knew that if we... You know, we look at these events and we try to make sense of these events and we have this discussion about these events. We were getting better. Yeah. We would make better decisions and we would have some sort of upward trajectory. But I didn't understand why. And it took me a while to really understand the significance of muscle memory and intuition when it came to league. And that was the big X factor for me. Because the giant critique of reviewing and challenge of learning in league was always this: Curtis, why should I review if I'm never going to see this situation again? That was always the question. And I always feel stumped. I remember back in the day, I'd be stumped. I'd be like, just do it. But it's not convincing.
It's
good for you. Right?
It's like eating broccoli, like eating vegetables.
Eat your vegetables, right? But what I realized is that is the completing this learning cycle again and again and again is what actually develops your underlying game sense. Remember when we were younger, I mean, you were playing games and we're like, that guy's got really good game sense. Or the term game sense got thrown around a lot. And I always interpreted it as talent. Game sense was talent. Mm. No. Game sense is basically your intuition when it comes to the game.
Pattern recognition.
Exactly. You've been in this similar scenario before. You've got the mental capacity to understand the game from their perspective. And because you're not dialed in on you, you're able to think holistically about the scenario. And you've been in a similar scenario many times before. You can kind of anticipate what's happening around you. And everyone listening to this has driven a car for upwards of 5 years has... driving sense. They're driving and you just get a vibe or a sense that car, they're driving dangerously and I should probably stay away from them. This guy's braking weird. I need to keep my distance from this guy. This is driving sense from our thousands of hours of just being in a car and putting ourselves in a wide variety of scenarios. So to answer that question again, if I get that question nowadays, but what's the point of reviewing? Why would I bother if I'm never going to see the situation again? The answer is, well, every time you complete the learning cycle, you're actually developing your underlying game sense and intuition. Yep. And if we do this again and again and again and again, we're refining our muscle memory. We're embedding things into our muscle memory. We're understanding things more deeply, building that base level of pattern recognition, which will ultimately allow us to have better quality responses in the future in the heat of the moment. And again, the metaphor I use for most players is you need to solve 1,000 puzzles, which essentially means you have to complete thousands of learning cycles over many, many areas of play. And that is the reality with League, because the game moves too fast. We can't use our prefrontal cortex to actually think about things all the time because we're in the shit. We're in the heat of the moment. We can't think. We have to do it, and we have to rely on our muscle memory and intuition so much. So when I understood this, that was the thing that really glued everything into place. And that is the foundation of, I think, if you were to learn over long run and review, you need to understand that pillar. That is the pillar of why we review, in my opinion.
So that sort of gets me to that other question that people, you know, say. It's like, well, then how did other people get challenged or pro players, stuff like that, without reviewing? Because you can improve without reviewing, but can you? Because what's happening is you're reviewing in the game.
In the moment,
which is, it does work for a lot. Like, people get real, like, let's say people get really, we found that with a lot of pro players, they get really angry when they die or make a mistake really hard on themselves, right? That's a common thing we've seen. They're actually reviewing that in their head during the time. They might review it after, but they are reviewing. It's just really inefficient, because the thing with league, there's so much big picture.
No, it's an and type of thing. This is,
It's both.
Yeah. So this is the thing, right? let's take, let's use a stereotype for a second, okay? Let's take a you know, those 19-year-old 1K LP, everyone thinks, you know, they don't review, okay? They do happen, right? You get these people. The question then becomes, okay, look at this guy's gaming history. What did he play before League? Okay. I guarantee you, if there's an 18, 19-year-old kid that is 1K LP in Shell and he doesn't review, he had a sophisticated gaming background. He would have started playing games, whether it's some sort of game, when he was a young kid.
Yeah, there's a good, Jojo Pion, who's, like, people said, like, one of the best players in the league at the moment, NA, Fortnite Pro.
Done,
Fortnite,
right?
Into rank one League of Legends.
So these are kids that have, and again, I'm going to speak for myself and speak for you. We played games from a very young age, okay? Now, the reason that's important is because the more familiar you are with competitive gaming experiences, the better you are at actually developing the skill of completing the learning cycle in the heat of the moment, okay? Because, okay, the way it works as a young kid, right? If you're a 13-year-old kid at school, or even, let's say, a 15-year-old kid at school, and you have a friend, you want to get better than that friend at school, or maybe there's an online friend, and you have no idea how to learn. No one's told you how to review. No one's told you how to learn jack shit. You know nothing, okay? Intuitively, you want to get better at the game. So what's going to happen? You're going to make a mistake. You're going to get pissed. And you're like, inside, you're going to be like, this is, again, it could be even be subconsciously. What should I have done better there? Oh, yeah, I need to respect that thing more. I shouldn't do that. That's dangerous. Or that's good. I want to do more of whatever that was and less of that. Over time, through hundreds and thousands of games, you're completing thousands and thousands and thousands of miniature feedback loops,
subconsciously,
without even realizing. Yeah. Just because you're having fun, you're in the heat of the moment, you want to get better at the game, you want to, you know, just, you laugh at that guy at school because you're better than him in high ranks. They're doing that without even realizing. So they actually are reviewing, and again, I can attest to that because it's exactly what me and you, what we did, because
yeah,
we cared a lot about it getting better. That was the only way we thought was possible. So you're not actually mindlessly spamming games. You're playing a lot of games, some of them may be mindless, and you are developing muscle memory and feel, but a lot of it, you're just trying to not make the same mistake. And so what happens is that 19-year-old challenge people, this guy, he's proof that you don't need a review. No, he just cares a lot. He has a very sophisticated gaming background. He's naturally competitive.
And he has reviewed just in the game. In the heat of the moment.
When that guy gets solo killed, he's going to try and understand, why did I get solo killed? Now, that's very different when we work with clients, and I'm just going to say it outright, with clients that have been, let's say, gold for 7 seasons or silver for 6 seasons, I ask them, so what happened after you died? They won't even attempt to problem solve that. That's the crazy thing. A lot of them don't have that inner monologue or that inner feedback loop. It's like, I make a mistake, that's it. End of story. Not even going to attempt to solve the problem.
Just move on. Just move on. Yeah, just get back literally out of base. Go again.
Pretend that never happened. Yeah. Literally pretend that never happened.
Yeah.
And that is the difference. The naturally competitive young kids want to improve, and they want to be better so much that they do this without even realizing it.
Yep.
And that is how people can get away with not reviewing. So ideally, what you want to do, though, with these talented players, and that's what I believe talent is. It's the combination of obviously hard work, but an experience, but also obviously competitive drive. Right? They're just so driven. Is to do this, they're going to do that anyway. They're going to do the game review. But they need to go after the game, go to those pivotal moments and really understand it.
That's right.
That's where you go to the next level.
Because League is so hard. You can review in the moment and get 80% of the learnings, but you can get an extra 20% by understanding, okay, let's just pause here. I didn't actually see that my Briar already used the Q or alt, or Lux already used her Q, so this fight wasn't going to be, you're probably going to be missing these little things.
You know what, you will 100% miss.
Yeah, you will 100% be missing things. Exactly right. So that's why you got to do both.
That's why you got to do both. Especially if you're not you're not naturally.
This is what deliberate practice really is, isn't it? Because this is at the edge of your ability. Like, you can, let's say lots of people can do their own in-game review because they want to get better, they want to climb. They utilize their gaming background, get to diamond super easy, right? But then they struggle in diamond. The only way you're going to get, you can do that. It's just going to be super slow. But if you do reviewing as well, the deliberate practice, then you're actually going to be improved. That's what we've seen with our clients, right?
That's right.
That's how they
get. And everyone's plateau point where their natural review process gets them, the plateau point is different for everyone. For some people, that's Emerald 4. For some people, that's D4. Some people, that's Grandmaster. That's literally different for everyone. So, you know, there's no like cookie cutter. You don't need to review till X rank. It depends on your gaming background and a lot of things that we don't really fully understand, and how, you know, intuitive League is to you, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a very important question. I'm glad we were able to answer that here.
Yep. Right, so what's next here, Curtis? So we've got, how has our review process evolved over the years?
Okay, let's talk about this one. I do think this is interesting. So, I think at the start, what's really important, what I really want to talk about here, I think the main thing I want to talk about is,
So first, we should define exactly what a review is. A review is recording your game from your POV, your POV. Mm-hmm. You can do the client reviews, but we found that POVs are much better. Getting it up and looking at the game. Like, that's what a review is.
Is that
how we define it?
Yeah, exactly. Spot on. And I think where we started was literally like, let's open up the VOD.
There was the client usually.
The client. And let's look at like the big team fight.
Yeah. Or the last part of the game.
So, okay. So let's do a really quick summary of how we got to where we are today with our perspective on reviewing, right? It started with not reviewing at all. And then realize, you know what, we probably should review some moments because there's some big shit happening. We don't really know what happened. So then we go to those big moments, maybe it's a lost team fight or whatever. And we, at the start, the big mistake we made was we only looked at the one moment, not the lead up to the moment. And then we realized over time that, you know, we probably should look at the lead up to this.
For like pro player, it would be like vision control, like in Dire Wolves.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we took this fight, but why were they here first? Or why were they able to get such good control?
Yeah.
And then it got to the point where it's like, Okay, let's look at this team fight, but why are they so far ahead of us? Like, why were they already had all this pressure and were already up an item on us or up 40 CS? Okay, well, let's go to that. And so we realized that everything boiled down to the first 8 minutes. We realized, why the fuck are we looking at a 15-minute team fight, 25-minute team fight when we're already behind by the first 8 minutes? So we started to realize, there's a lot here to unpack in the first 8 minutes. And I think over years, it literally took us years, I think, to really realize that the game really, like, the most important thing to get sorted is your first 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's intuitive now. It's no shit. But at the time, it wasn't actually that intuitive.
No, it wasn't. It's really crazy to think that wasn't part of thought process at all. It was just, let's look at this team fight, or let's look at this
macro.
Death or macro. Yeah. It was generally like that, wasn't it?
It was like for a long time.
Yeah.
Because that's what the game, that's what everyone thought competitive was all about. It was about the big macro rotations.
It was about
the team fights. Yeah. It was about all that stuff. Vision.
I mean, people knew that like losing lane was like not ideal, but people weren't thinking about how to min-max. Like win. Like, let's just figure out how to hard win lane phase.
Because people were so concerned about compositions.
And it'll just be like, let's just go even in lane.
Just go handshake. But then like, well, we can actually play this like solo queue and actually try to solo kill people. Like that was like playing competitive like solo queue was such a groundbreaking thing that no one even knew. Because
it was all about team play. Team.
Exactly. And so we realized that over time, that the first 8 minutes was really important. And I think that was the start of everything. Once we realized that, okay, there's a lot here to unpack in the first 8 minutes. And I think that led us down the rabbit hole of, oh shit. Yeah, maybe that's where your end of review process came from.
Because I brought that in early.
You brought that in early because you realized, didn't you, that, well, why are we looking at this thing here when you've already died, failed all these ganks.
I think it was easier to come to that conclusion from a jungle perspective because a jungler does technically have a significant amount of influence compared to other roles in the early stages of the game. Like, at the end of the day, even outside of a solo kill, correct me if I'm wrong, Curtis, but if you as a jungler counter gank someone level 4, get a double kill, push the wave in, reset, I don't think in the first 4 minutes there's anything more valuable than that in League of Legends. No,
probably not.
Probably not, right? Like, you could say a solo kill, but they're probably still trading resources and stuff like that.
Minus
right?
maybe some sort of, like, a really, like, good level one invade.
Yeah, maybe. I guess so. Yeah, but yeah.
Maybe.
That's obviously not that consistent.
No.
So, stuff like that, like, a jungler can do, you know, big things like that or, you know, yeah, counter gank or... kill the enemy jungler in their, you know, killing the enemy in their jungle
that's
and
huge.
You know, utilizing priority. So that's just sort of capping into it. Because if I get invaded, let's say the common summon was Evelynn, right? Like everyone invades Evelynn, right? So I do my blue, Gromp, Wolves, Raptors, and then Lee Sin kills my red buff. That's really, really, really bad. We need to problem solve that sort of stuff. Because that's like, you know, this is, and then once we problem solve that, the game's a different game. It's like if you waste Lee Sin's time, do the Krugs or go trade something on the other side, then you're playing a different League different of Legends game. Completely.
So you realize that just intuitively from your jungle
and
games.
And that stems to other lots of other different things. It's like, let's look at gank funding. Okay, we're stuffing up this gank. All right, and that's the other thing. Junglers ruin games super easily from bad ganks. Ganking whether it's a massive wave. Ganking when you have, you're ganking a Kayle against a Darius and you're playing Kayn, you do negative damage.
And I think you realize this, yeah, it was very naturally because I think you realize, okay.
I guess going to the what makes an expert, the feedback was you've ruined the game.
Yeah.
Like the game's like fucked. So like this is massively important. There's literally no point in reviewing this when you've given Darius a double kill and pushed a wave and reset.
And the first 8 meters being the time in the game where it's your decisions and you're in control of those. Like massively, it's more about you.
That's right. It's all about
and
you.
So, so the feedback loop's more about, it's more personalized, if you will, right? Yeah. So yeah, I think intuitively you kind of realize that this is the most important.
Yeah, I think the jungle role, you know, because it's like you look at, you know, every other role and no.
Well, look, it still is. I was still very impact. Obviously, very impact. Like,
it's just so obvious as a jungle.
It's way more obvious. That's why I don't think I came to that. I could come to that conclusion, honestly, even though it sounds obvious in hindsight. And then I think everything that from there stemmed from that point onwards. Once we figured out that the game revolved around the first 8 minutes, everything was just an extension of that. Then it became to refining that process. Okay, so.
So you got a couple of dot points here, Cody. You said looking over random parts, unimportant parts, extremely inefficient.
Where are we looking at here?
Number two.
Yeah, I don't want to go over that. I don't think it's actually important. I was going to walk through how we come to that conclusion, but yeah, I don't want to go over that. Okay, so let's move on now. Let's get specific. Let's move on to the actual review techniques. Okay, so now that we've spoken about like the intuition and learning cycle and what makes an expert and all that stuff, let's get into the real nitty gritty here.
Okay.
So I want to talk about, we've already kind of spoke about it, the end of review process. You've already kind of mentioned that. I want to talk about...
Let me just quickly define that more. So it's not exactly like, you know, a death can be, there can be good, it's sort of like the point where the game starts to lose a lot of, you feel like you lose a lot of control. You have significantly less options.
That's one way of framing it, right? The game, you now have less options. But I actually think it's very simple. I think it's, what is the moment where, you know, your champ, like you can't play in accordance to your champ's identity anymore?
Okay.
Kind of. Like, I feel like if I'm playing Orianna and I need to, you know, my identity in this mid jungle 2v2 is to win my lane, bully my opponent, get a lead, and then utilize my lead in the early lane to do other things. If I'm not getting an early lead, if I'm not ticking the basics of my champ's identity and game plan, that's a disaster. Like, I need to figure out why am I not even able to do the bare minimum of my champ's identity. Or it's like, or I'm playing TF and I waste my R. You know, that everything revolves around my R. I need to create a secondary win con with my R. If I can't do that, then, you know what I mean? Like, so the way I view it is like, if I'm not able to fundamentally fulfill my champ's identity or my champ's role in a game, doesn't mean the game's over. There's obviously other things I can do.
And you still can execute your champ identity in later fights and stuff
later,
like
that. But my point being, like, what if I can't do the basics of my game plan, that's a real big problem.
And that's the first, remember, it's about learning. Yeah. It's like, that's the learning. Move on to the next one.
Again, it's
like,
not about the result of the game whatsoever.
No, it's not trying to problem solve how to win a game. It's like, let's just get some learnings. I mean, we need to keep talking about the review process, why it's important, Curtis, because... confusion, you can't, again, it's about, I mean, I guess we sort of talked about it before, is that let's not get confused about this 20-minute team fight when we've died the first two times and we've given every objective and all that sort of stuff, you know, as a, again, from a jungler's perspective. It's such a, it, people say, think it's like, you know, toxic and, you know, people say it's,
it can be.
Games, it can, you can be. It we can have be. Explored that.
We have explored that.
It's so important to just not get confused by it. It's like, okay, that makes sense. That's what we're trying to get in review. It makes sense. And then you're not tilting, raging. You're going to Reddit, spamming, this game sucks. You know, yes. That's, you know, oh, this is important.
So good. I think you're spot on here, Nathan. That is actually what reviewing, that's one of the most important aspects of reviewing, is simply making sense of the game.
That's right.
That's it. That, like the learning, obviously, but the legit, just the making sense of the game. It's like, you're a jungler and you fail gank and you get double killed. And then the game is like really, really hard. Mm. It shouldn't be, if you're confused as to why the game is hard, that's a huge red flag, right? You want to be able to know exactly why the game is hard.
Super important.
And that's and that's what reviewing helps you with. It's like,
I always say, like, let's not get confused. Like, you know, when I see people say like their MMR, like they're stuck, and like you see it on Twitter and Reddit, I just literally want to go to them and say, let's not get confused yet. We could, anyone, any challenge player, anyone could literally get a platinum player that says they're hard stuck. Look at three games and literally list out every single moment where they ruin the game.
Yep.
Every single game, yep, on point, great principles, things that are consistent, not random, things, yep, that are in your control. That's the way League works.
That's the way League works.
Because if it didn't work that way, If everything was random, it was based on team fights, there would be
rank system wouldn't exist.
The rank system, esports wouldn't exist.
Esports wouldn't exist.
It would be impossible for a player like Faker to win as many. You have pros for like 3 weeks, and then the next person's thing is just about randomness. The fact that that exists means that the rank system must be working extremely well if pro players have long careers.
Yep. And just, again, it ties into that. They're unconsciously incompetent. They don't know what they don't know. So rather than trying to be, explore and trying to be curious and figure out what's going wrong, they just say that, no, it's unclimbable. You can't win this game. It's unfixable.
Yeah.
So there's no curiosity there. Yeah. And that's what reviewing's only really doable if you have a curious mindset as well, by the way. There's the mindset behind reviewing is actually really important. Like if you come to a review and you're genuinely curious trying to figure shit out, you're probably going to get a lot of learning from it. But if you come into the review and you've already decided this game was ruined, game was over at Champ Select, you're probably not going to get much learning from the review. Even if you open it and you're looking at shit, you're not going to get much
waste of time. What did I want to do? What does my team want to do? What does the enemy team want to do? Simple questions.
Totally.
Curiosity mindset.
Yeah, I think...
So you have the reviewing mindset, like overall, like reviewing games are important to making sense of things. And the end of review process, the next layer, it's like now, like, let's really make sense of things. Like, this is why we're in this position, because of the snowball nature of the game.
Yeah, and like I say end of review a lot in my reviews, but then keep reviewing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so end of review, okay,
just game, so we're like aware, like we put a pin. It's like
put a pin.
Whatever we say, let's not forget this. We'll write down the learn objective. Let's not forget the end of review, because I actually have to say that multiple times, because we'll start talking about something in 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, but remember, this game could have been ways if you played to the right lane. Or you lane.
Now you've just made the game a trillion times harder. Yeah. You know, the game's not over. You can probably still play some fights well.
And we'll have learning objectives like, how do I fight? What's my role in fights?
But, it's like, there's a giant but here. It's like, okay, if this we did this, the game would be so easy.
Because the fact is, as well, that you don't climb, no one has ever climbed in League of Legends playing from behind 80% of their games. People genuinely think if they fix playing from behind, they start climbing. But it's like, no, let's actually get ahead, close out the game. That's actually how you get the just above 50% win. It's how you climb.
It's so funny. I did a daily tidbit today talking about just being curious as to why you're losing prio. I did this master review where he was in a high elo lobby game. It was like versus GMs and Charles, right? And he was just getting... He was bleeding prior every way, even though he couldn't have.
It makes the game so easy for the enemy team.
Yeah, and I'm like...
Let's figure that out.
I'm like, let's not scratch our head why this game felt hard. It's like, well, the question is, why are we losing prior every single wave? And I said, okay, well, that might be the case, right? Maybe that's the matchup. Maybe that's the mid-jungle 2v2. But the question, should I really be losing my prior here? You need to ask that question. Like, that's a really fucking important question. Mm. If you can't answer that, if you're just losing prio for the sake of you just don't know, well, then fuck. What's the point? You're going to lose the game, you know? And I think that, like, I think that's what reviewing does. It's like, well, okay, this game feels like shit. Why does it feel like shit?
That's a good place to start, isn't it?
It's a very good place to start. That's why I love asking. And that's why actually one of my most common review techniques I tell people. Go to 3 moments into the game, you felt like utter shit.
You felt like zero.
You felt like you felt confused, yeah. You felt anxious, you felt and just try and take one thing away from it. Why was this situation uncomfortable? Why was this situation negative?
And again, you might have to be going 60 seconds, 2 minutes beforehand.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, yeah, I went to this play and I didn't have my R. And you realize things that in hindsight are very basic a lot of the time.
I was getting more into specific techniques for reviewing, so how to review.
Well, we've got learning objectives here.
Mm.
Okay. I don't want to go too deep on this. I think very, very basically, right? Learning objectives, I feel like, is a fucking can of worms, dude.
Yeah.
Maybe we come back to learning objectives. Okay. I reckon let's do that later.
I agree.
I've got a term here called exploratory reviews. And essentially, exploratory reviews are kind of what I said before, where it's like, okay, you don't really have a learning objective that you're specifically honing in on. You don't know maybe what is specifically going wrong with your play. So you're just playing. And just kind of in the post-game review, going over a bunch of what you deem to be pivotal moments, confusing moments. This is what I call exploratory reviews. These are very good when you're plateaued because you're just trying to keep an open mind. What's going wrong? How are my early games going? Am I struggling in the early game? Oh, yeah, my team fights maybe not that good.
Did you ask about ability? Am I using an R or an E or something
like that?
Yeah,
and it's what you're trying to really figure out is what's going on here? Really high level. What's going on in my game's big picture? And I think that like I love doing or going through phases with exploratory reviews because it's a really great kind of way to identify patterns and trends and what's going on in your journey big picture. So and if you're ever confused about what to focus on, just do exploratory reviews. You don't need to have a specific learning objective or something, one specific thing to focus on. I mean, it helps if you do. It definitely is helpful, but you're not always going to have that luxury. Exploratory reviews are great.
I think they're really important. You need to have it's like the and. You need to have the exploratory reviews because some games you might not really have your learning objective might be applicable every game.
Exactly. You've got to be willing to do both.
Just like, yeah, let's quickly explore a couple of moments.
And then I've got the micro-macro technique, and this is my bread and butter in my program. This is legit 95% of my reviews are talking to this one. So every client, every rank. Ready?
I haven't heard of this one, goodness.
Okay, so basically what the micro-macro framework is that say there is a moment and it could be anything. It could be a trade in lane. It could be a lost 2v2. It could be a lost dragon fight. It could be any situation involving the enemy, right? What you do is you always look at the micro first. You look at the ability usage. You look at your positioning, you look at your target selection, you look at your fighting, you look at all of that. Summoner usage, spell usage, everything. Micro. The actual interaction of the champions, the specifics of the fight itself. Now, once you've looked at it from that through that lens, then what you do is you say, okay, well, why am I even here? Was this even a good play to go for? You zoom out. You zoom out big time. You look at it from a macro lens. Okay, let's ignore the fight for a second.
No.
Should we even be at this dragon? Should I even be here? Why was I 50 seconds late? Whatever the hell the question is, it's from a macro lens. So this is what I call zooming in, zooming out, micro, macro. But you always, always start with micro because the macro might not even be important if you could have just played the fight better.
Yeah.
It's like if you just land your E here and position better, well, who gives a shit about the macro? This was a one fight.
Because league's messy, dude. Like, you know, exactly. People aren't playing perfect macro, even challenging.
You don't even need to. You don't need to have
Yeah, you don't. Macro. You can climb. A lot of people, there's lots of people's journeys that they climb purely for macro. They win fights at a 2v3 all the time, you know? So
micro is the most important aspect, 100%.
Did that shift over the years? Did you start with macro? Did you always know macro was important from the get-go?
I think more of than not was more macro. I realized
because that's what me was. When I first started jungle coaching in 2019, 2020, when I started my YouTube channel, it was all about pathing, wing condition, shit like that. And then as I evolved, it's literally like champ mastery, how to use my abilities, micro. They're both important, but that's really damn important.
Fighting and ability usage is kind of number
that's
one.
That's legal edge because you can't win a game without fighting. That's the fact.
And it's always going to be a Kodo game.
Yeah. But you can win a game without any macro.
But what I love that about this framework, the micro macro, is that there's always something to take away from it. Like every situation. It's like, okay, well, maybe the macro was good and I can take ability usage. Or maybe the ability usage, everything was good, but I just shouldn't have been here. Like, there's always something you can take away. It's just a real... So what I would do, this ties in with the exploratory review process. So my number one... This goes to everyone watching this podcast right now. If you're not a part of our program, doesn't matter what role you play, anything. Go to three moments in your game in the post game. It could be anything that's confusing. And then employ the micro-macro framework in each of those three situations. That is the best all-round solid review process you could possibly have, in my opinion.
Tried and tested. Yeah, true and tested.
I mean, that's what I do. That's what I recommend to most of my clients. You can't go wrong with that.
Great. So that's like a lot of good intro.
Yes, if you're new to reviewing, that's huge. And then we've got feelings-based review, which is kind of similar to exploratory review. You know, the difference between exploratory reviews where you can actually be more logical. It's like, okay, this was a situation that, like, our team got aced. Like, you can just be objective. It's like, we lost a dragon. Let's take a look at that. We lost Baron. Let's take a look at that. Feelings-based reviews are more so, what are moments in the game where I felt uncomfortable? Like, it might have been something small. Like, I felt like I was really inefficient here. Or I felt like I was in the wrong place. Why does it feel like I'm losing so much pressure? It's like a feeling. Use your feelings to guide where you're directing your attention in the review. And again, you don't need to do everything. Pick two, three, four things max. And then you might use the feelings to guide where you're directing your attention. And then, boom, micro-macro framework.
Love it.
Very simple. Moving on. The next one we have here is the ACE method. Shout out Coach Cupcake for, he invented this one, which is, says the ACE is a, what do they call it? What's the word for, like, acronym? Is that what it's called?
Acronym, yeah.
A stands for acknowledge. Acknowledge the best play. C was communicate the best play, and E is embrace reality.
Yeah, the embrace reality is where people
struggle. And I love this review, this method. This is a methodology of, like, I think it's both it's more of like, it's both in game and out of game. So I like to do both. So in game, it's like, okay, I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to acknowledge the best play. I'm going to communicate the best play. And then if they ignore my play, or maybe that's not the way the game is going, I'm going to embrace reality, go with whatever the next best thing is. But I love this for reviewing as well, because when you're reviewing, it's like, okay, what was the best play here? Did I communicate the best play? And did I embrace reality? It's an interesting framework that you can use.
Yeah, it's like more of an emotional framework as well.
It gets the creative juices flowing. Yeah. I think it's good high quality questions. Mm. You know, it primes you to think about the game in a very pragmatic way. I think it's a really great technique.
Yeah.
I got here as well, surface level versus root cause. So I have covered this, I think, on a Curtis's clip at some point. I was going to reiterate this one. I think this one's huge. I think this one's especially for junglers. So Nathan, you've been very vocal about, since ages, about like jungle camp efficiency. Mm. The importance of like clearing your camps properly, right? And so let's say, for example, I've heard you talk about this, where there's a scenario where the jungler pass somewhere and they get to a play just a little bit late and the play doesn't work. Well, you can look at it on a surface level being like, oh yeah, you lost the 2v2, you messed up your ability usage here. But the root cause of why this play didn't work out well is because you actually cleared your camps inefficiently.
Or you went for a gank that wasn't gankable and you were 20, you know, 10 seconds, 15 seconds. That's more common.
Right.
You know what? More often than not, clearing camps slowly to get to a play is actually quite rare in reviews, right? Believe it or not. Even
I'm just thinking more in the past. I think in the past, when you were early on in your journey,
it's more just, if you don't know what a good or a bad gank is, then you're going to be highly inefficient in your experience in gold, because you're going to show on the map. Because if you don't get your camps on the map, you give the enemy jungle counter on jungle opportunities, and you relieve pressure from the entire map because you just failed a gank. Like, it's really bad.
I'll use a different example.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say this one. A jungler comes out of a base and goes to gank a side lane.
Mm.
And they lose that 2v2. There's a 2v2 or something. And maybe they go top and they lose a 2v2. And you can look at it and use that. You look at maybe the micro ability usage. Maybe the Jarvan rush, the EQ. You know, what are some of those cardinal sins with ability usage? They just walked up and rushed their ability rather than holding their ability, whatever, right? You can look at that. But the root, so that might be a surface level review. I wouldn't say it's surface level, but it could be considered a surface level. The root cause might be, well, this never worked because you're playing to your weak side. You're not even playing to the win condition.
Yep.
Right? So the way I view surface level versus root cause is that a lot of us tend to look at just the initial baseline, easy to observe learning.
Miss abilities.
Boom. A great thing to say. I was like, oh, yep, just miss my E. And yes, that's worth noting. And that's important learning. But sometimes the root cause is deeper than that. And so the way you want to think it is, in terms of behavior change, right? And this is the way I think about it in mid lane specifically. I might go for this play and I might have executed it wrong. But the reason I executed it wrong is because maybe I had the wrong mindset with my champion. That's the root cause. It's like, I used my E like this. For example, I went to this fight and I rushed my E. Well, the question is, okay, why did I rush my E? Oh yeah, because I felt really flustered because I thought we were really far behind and if I didn't get this kill, we're going to lose the game.
Yeah.
That is the root cause of yeah. why I rush my ability. The surface level takeaway from that situation might be, oh, you just rush your ability. And sure, that's true. That's objectively true, but why? And so if I came into that review, my takeaway, oh, Curtis, you just got to stop rushing your abilities. Well, that's not going to get me very far if the root cause is, you know what, Curtis, you need to stop exaggerating the game state and actually understand that the game wasn't over whatsoever and believe that your champion scales. That's the root cause. And so I think that when you're something that I've had to develop one of the skills in my review, not only personally, but in my coaching sessions, is what is the root cause? It could be very convenient. I could just say, oh, yep, you got to hold your abilities more. You got to be more accurate with your ability. You got to get more last hits, whatever. But let's get specific. What is the root cause of this specific skill, this specific behavior? And shifting your mind and asking yourself that question, is this really the reason why I made this decision? What can I actively take? How, if I was in this situation again, and this is another way to frame it. If I was in this situation again, what would I have done? Now, if you say to yourself after asking that question, I probably would have done the same thing. Well, then that means you haven't gone deep enough, right? So so then it becomes, okay, well, how, if I was in this situation again, what information would I have had to maybe process? How would I have had to change my mindset? How would I have had to been thinking to make a differing decision? That's how you get to the root cause of a problem.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by surface level versus root cause.
Yeah. It's very hard for people to get to root cause, but this is, you know, notice what everything that we've been doing here, guys, when we're talking about, it's always just asking high quality questions. It's just always just bringing it back, trying to think big picture.
Micro macro.
Embracing reality from the ACE method. I'd say that's probably the biggest problem. Yeah. With a bad review technique is more to, yeah, someone looking at surface level, not trying to figure out the root cause of why they're making these mistakes.
Reviewing deaths.
So review deaths is interesting. It's sort of tied into a lot what we've talked about because, you know, that is sort of everything.
I do want to say one thing about this one that is really, really important, okay? You know how we've been talking about developing, like reviewing and looking and like getting into the details in your review, and we talk about developing intuition, okay? Game sense. One of my big breakthroughs was actually understanding that learning is not just about you. It's about the opposition. It's about other people. To really bring it down to a very fundamental level, when there's a situation, let's take a trade, and I go for a given trade, it's about how my kit interacts with their kit. Okay. It's not just my kit. It's not about just me. So then in order to really develop a very sophisticated level of game understanding and intuition, I need to be able to ask the question, well, why did they do that? So if I die to a gank, right? If I die, this is what I recommend to when reviewing deaths. The surface level response would be, oh, I died. Oh yeah, I got a ward and lean better. The next level would be, okay, well, how could I have known that I should ward and lean? Okay, you might get into, okay, oh yeah, I should have checked the minimap. I should have realized I don't have any wards, blah, blah, blah. There's another level, another level deeper than that. If I was that Gragas jungle, why would I come mid? If I was that Rek'Sai, why would I do that?
Typically, a lot of the time, it will make sense when you ask that question. Putting yourself in the shoes of the enemy, well, from a jungle perspective, it's always putting yourself in the shoes of the enemy laner and your laner. What do they want to do? Really important. League is, we've talked about this before, and this is actually one of our huge critiques of people that like, say like, you know, our teammates who are bots and stuff. Where League is a very human game. The psychology, you can just read a player so much about their level of play, where they're at in their journey, just from you know, the decisions that they're making. It's such a human game. It makes me smile because I just love League of Legends because, you know, just what, all my clients that I've worked with and just, you know, I have this like little thing. I love watching the enemy make mistakes, specifically when my client has made them make that mistake.
Yeah.
You know, like I just love that so much. But again, it's so human. You know?
It is very human, yeah. You can tell from just the way they move and the decisions they're making, what they're not thinking about or what they are thinking about.
That's right.
But I think that is a question that, again, we're talking about tried and true techniques. If you're listening to this podcast, ask yourself that question. If I were them, why would I do that? What is it that I don't understand about that champion's kit? Such an important question.
Super important. So yeah, I guess it's sort of like understanding. Yeah, I guess there's levels of that. There's like understanding what they want to do, but also understanding their psychology mindset as well. A common one I always will see is like, why does Elena stay in greed for plates? Because they're like, God, like they don't respect tempo, you know, stuff like that.
Yes.
Like, you know, that's a very common one. It's a psychological thing, isn't it? Because you can see the way they're thinking. It's like plates are good, but they're not thinking about the tempo that they lose. Now they lose dragon because of that. I always highlight that in my reviews.
And I think now we can maybe talk a little bit about learning objectives here. I was thinking.
Okay. I wanted to go quickly over another rule here. I love the 28-second rule that I use. The 28-second rule is essentially 8 seconds to recall, 20 seconds to get back on the map. You can sort of do something. It's 28 seconds. So what you do is you think about, I made a play here. What happens if 28 seconds I was there for something else? Like just to see what the map
state. It gives you like a time.
Yeah, see what the map state looked like 28 seconds from now. Like missing counting ganks is a big one. Not getting to objectives first and stuff like that. Really very practical, good rule. Junglers specifically, I guess maybe it applies more to. But the 28 second rule would apply in that exact scenario with the overstaying for plights, by the way. Yeah. 28 seconds to get back to the 8 second recall back. I guess it's a little bit longer for lane because you get to a safe position. God, for a lane, it probably takes like 30 seconds to get back on the map, right? It takes a long time.
You've got to find a good sort. Yeah.
I
like it. That's an awesome
technique. That's a great tool that we can use in our reviews.
So learning objectives. So now that we've covered a lot of things here. So the first question is, are learning objectives necessary? The answer is no. Just like we mentioned before with the, you know, high elo players are never reviewed. You don't specifically need one thing to focus on. Is it helpful? Yeah, it is very helpful, right? It streamlines the process because it means that when you're going into the review, you know exactly what to look for.
It's just cutting everything, all the bullshit. I'm like, sort of like the way I think about it, it's like, I got like trash everywhere and like, I just push it all and like, this is the that I'm focusing on.
Yep.
And that helps so much. Again, given because people, okay, this actually goes to a mindset. People want to try and squeeze everything out of a review, right? Of like one game, they want to solve the game from one review, but that's not how the game works. That's not how improving the game works. So if you just say fuck everything else, I'm only working on jungle tracking. I'm only working on my Hecarim R usage. It's you're learning.
Completing the same learning cycle. Any opportunity where you can complete the same, a very similar learning cycle in a shortest time period, the better, right? If you could work on your E usage as Syndra, right? And just look at all your E's. It's like, oh, there's an E usage, I complete that one. And then, because you can take that learning through to many, many other scenarios in the review as well. And you're looking at the E usage through different lenses. It's just, it's again, completing that learning cycle way more often, essentially. So it's strengthening that muscle way more effectively, way more efficiently, and you're getting to the point of unconscious competence faster.
That's right.
That's really basically what's happening.
Funny, I remember a very specific one. Oh, it's like 2-3 years ago. I remember when TP, you could TP to
minions.
I mean, like early.
Oh, really?
Top laners. There was a big meta. Right? Top laners always would TP towards bot, and I made the same mistake over and over again. Of going for a bot gank when the enemy top laner was able to get TP, right? I'd lost so many games from it. This is what I get when I was sort of struggling in like Master Grandmaster. And then I built that unconscious competence where like I would like be ready to like bait out. I'm going to just bait out the TP, you know, stuff like that. Or like I'm aware that's going to happen, so I'm not going to go for that play. I'm going to hit my camp to go do something else. I remember that was such a specific learning objective I worked on for like only a week. And I was just rock solid at it, dude. I was so good.
That's awesome.
I remember that once. Like, I will never forget that because I was genuinely pissed off. Like I was like throwing my, you know, I was going to throw my keyboard. Not that much, but like, you know, I was like, this is just ruining games so much.
I want to talk about going back to learning objectives here.
Yeah.
I think that the way I view learning objectives, though, it's kind of like an additional thing. So it's like you do both. You have learning objectives, right? You might have your, again, an ability usage thing. It's like, I want to work on my e-usage. That doesn't mean that's the only thing you can look for. I mean, for some people, they might, their personality, they might want to hyper-focus on one thing. But I think for a lot of people, especially the more experienced players, they might want to have a learning objective of working on their, let's say they want to work on their, mid-game, identifying farm windows or team fighting, whatever. There's like one thing, but that might not be the only thing they look for. It's like, okay, I'm going to work on my team fighting. That's something I really want to focus on in the post game, but I also want to skim over my first 8 minutes or I want to work on my resets in the early lane, but I'm also going to take a look at my team fights. Like, it's okay to have a learning objectives, hyper-focusing on it, still do a lot of energy and focus, but then just make a few observations here and there.
Yeah, so I guess it's like, don't try and squeeze everything out of a game, but just like do a little bit of it. It's like, do a medium squeeze. I mean? Like, you can get a little bit more out of a game than just your learning objective you're sort of trying to
do. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. It's like, it just feels a bit inefficient sometimes if that's the only thing you're going to look for, you know?
That's right.
And then obviously reviews, they should be no longer than 5 minutes. I mean, honestly, if you're reviewing for more than 5 minutes.
That's a question. Like, this is a huge reason why people struggle to review, because they think a review is meant to be like an SF thesis they've got to like sent right up and like send to like one of us or something like that. Quick. The quicker, the better. And it's a skill to develop.
It's a skill.
God, there's so many different directions we can go.
It's ridiculous. It's like 4 hours. So the skill, it's important to be reviewing
as a skill. You got to understand that it's a skill, yes, because people will get so intimidated by the reviewing.
So the reason it's a skill is, number one, you'll get better at identifying the end of review moments. That's one thing you'll get better at. You'll get better at actually not feeling attacked when you look at your own mistakes. That's a common mental block. People feel like they hate looking at their mistakes at the start when they first start reviewing, because they feel like, I don't know, I guess they feel like disgusted at their gameplay.
It's hurts the ego, right? Yeah.
Hurts the ego. Yeah. So I think
people are scared to see the reality of their gameplay. Because that might hurt the narratives, right? Yeah. They think that like, I'm just a victim of the game. But they know that's not exactly true, but they would like that narrative to be true. You know
what I mean? And when it's in front of your face, you can't escape
it. No, that's right. It's like the brutal reality.
And everyone thinks they're better than they are. When you look at the reality of your gameplay, it hits like a truck.
It does.
It hits like a truck.
Your movement, even especially when you look at your POV, your camera control, that's shocking to a lot of people.
It can be shocking.
People are like, is it that bad? I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
So that will help get over that. The more you review, it will just be nothing. It will just be just pure get into the details. Efficiency in terms of like, the speed of reviews. I think this, you just get quicker.
Of course. I mean, we've massively...
Just complete that learning cycle faster. It's like, this is what I did. I remember what I was thinking. This is what... Yeah, this is the outcome. You just get better at reviewing situations.
Going back to the how to be an expert Veritas video, the pattern recognition with chess players, it's building up that pattern recognition so you get quicker. I see this situation. I've been in this situation many times. Bam, I know this is it. Oh, that's that mistake instantly quick. Because remember, we're always going to be making the same... You're going to be constantly making this... You're going to fix a learning objective, make the same mistake, but you realize the pattern so you can fix it way quicker. It's sort of like analogy of like going to the gym and like taking 3 months off. Because you've got that muscle memory of like how to do the exercise and like your muscle, that muscle memory, you can actually get back to your weight quite quickly rather than being a beginner.
100%.
Because you got the pattern recognition, I guess, is like muscle memory there.
Yeah. And I think there's an element of just like getting in, you just got to have a crack. Like everyone's going to be shocking.
That's
at it.
That's right.
It took me years, you just got to have a crack. And still it doesn't have to be perfect. Just make it, even if it's messy.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly.
And this is my fault, as we've got to say. Even if you just take one thing away, there's one thing, and maybe your one thing might be, in this team fight, I went for this team fight without my R. Boom.
Done.
If that's it, that's it.
But people hate to hear that. It's like, oh, that's so ridiculous. The two things I hear, that's just like so ridiculous, so obvious. And number two, it's the reality, dude. I see it every day.
Because again, the people think that I think there's going to be some crazy sophisticated.
They want it to be sophisticated,
but it's not.
It's not. It's not
every time. It's basic. Yep. Like, one thing that's pissing me off lately is this whole like narrative in the league community about like Emerald being like this.
Oh.
God. It just pisses me off so
like
much.
Like Emerald 4 is like absolute yellow hell and high VM.
And it's like just the amount of content creators that push this narrative about Emerald. It just makes me want to vomit, right? Because Emerald is so easy to review. Like, nothing is confused with Emerald Place. No. Like, if you're an Emerald, it makes perfect fucking sense why you're an Emerald. Like, mm-hmm. I did an Emerald review today, mm-hmm. High Emerald. And it's just the basics of the basics. Mm-hmm. It's like you're going for a play when your team's on recall. Mm-hmm. You're going for a play without your R. You're just mindlessly A-ramming when you could be getting sideways. Like, the amount of learning is overwhelming, you know? And it's just, like, mind-boggling, you know? And if you just review and we look at these key pivotal moments, there's so much to do. And again, they think that there's some sophisticated system holding the back. They think that there's some crazy sophisticated macro that's required to climb. You got to 1v9 every game. No. You just got to play in accordance to your champ's identity. Do the basics of win condition, just the basics of fundamentals, and you will get to diamond relatively quickly.
Well, not exactly.
Depends. Not relatively quickly, but you do that but enough,
yes,
and you build that muscle memory, the results will come inevitably. We don't know when, but it will come.
There's clear, I guess to summarize what you're trying to say better, it's there's clear skills that Emerald players consistently lack.
Yes.
They're good at a lot of things. They can be good at things. They can at 10 CS per minute, but they need to polish that up. And if they do have deliberate practice, polish it up, then that's how you get to diamond. That's the only way you get to diamond.
And getting that idea out of the people's head that it's going to be some crazy shit that they have to review is going to be super complicated. No.
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 So learn objectives, Curtis. Anything more?
Yeah,
about
I mean,
that?
I think that's kind of the basics really for now. Okay, so let's get some frequently asked questions here, Nathan.
I want to quickly talk about that. Reviewing your games versus challenger games or high elo games.
Okay.
So you've talked before about you think reviewing high elo players or especially one tricks on your own server is better than like watching a Korean or something like that.
All the
like
time.
Similar rank.
If you're in NA, for example, and you're an NA Zia, you should watch NA Zia games. Right. And now, look, I'm not to say there is, okay. What you get from Korean and Chinese games is ability usage and team fighting and skirmishing.
This is important. I've looked at it from a mid perspective. Before jungle, I feel like it's almost completely used. Like the game is a different game as a jungler's perspective. Completely in terms
it would be
of early game, mid game. It's like I've tried to do that before, but it's just there's just no use to it unless you're like getting the ability. She's looking at some fights and stuff like that. But yeah.
So ability usage, skirmishing, fighting. That's the main thing for Korean and Chinese stuff.
You know,
laning even like you can take stuff away.
Like matchups and stuff.
Matchups
like
and trading and like spacing and you can definitely get things away. But you won't get big picture stuff.
No macros stuff.
And I think it's helpful. If you're in Europe, you should watch European VODs. Mm. If you're a Master Tier Zed player, don't watch Z99. Watch like the top Zed players in your server. Mm. Like I think, you know, people think that, yeah, objectively those players might be better, but it doesn't matter because the games are just so different. It's hard to not get confused. It's like, this doesn't look anything like my games, you know?
And even if you think it does look like it, it's not. Because
and also,
there's so much different pace and
different
pressure.
Pace, but then also rank as well. If you're in, you know, platinum, you know, watching a challenger game, it's like it's night and day. Now, again, it's not to say there's things you can't take away, but in a weird way, sometimes you would be better watching like a master tier, even a diamond game. Even if it sounds ridiculous, just because they might be a little bit more realistic to what you're going to experience. Now, again, you still should watch high-level games as either ability usage and fighting and trading and what are they kind of doing. But again, take it with a grain of salt, a pinch of salt. I think it's important.
I mean, if you're like master tier, grandmaster, then watching, I think, pros on other servers definitely is going to be helpful.
For sure.
You know, but again, we're talking about, you know, probably, you know, diamond
low. So let's get into some frequently asked questions. The first one here is, how do I start reviewing?
Just do it.
What would you say, Nathan?
We sort of talked a little bit about breaking down the narratives around why people don't review. How do I start reviewing?
Okay, well, I'll start to get some ideas going. Review your first two deaths.
Yep. That's a good start.
Like, you can't go wrong with reviewing. There's so much information in a death. Take a look at your first two deaths. Try to understand why you died, what you would do next time. You know, try and look at the game, look at the situation from the enemy's perspective. Just explore those deaths. Ask some high quality questions around those two deaths. That's it. That's a really good place to start, I think. Like, you don't even have to go into anything else.
Nope.
Like, I think that's a really great entry level point.
I think entry level for ability usage as well. Just choose one ability, like your R or your E or something like that, usually for a lot of champs.
I love that. Yep. Just pick one ability. I'm going to review my R usage. I'm going to review my E usage, whatever. That's great.
And I think your first reviews, make them incredibly short. Again, like that should be short, right? It's like, I think about, let's just use the example of like, just go to the gym. You don't have to have good form, nothing. Just get in there. Just get to the location. Think about the review. Get the VOD. Start
open
building that skill of like opening it up, like recording something. Like start building that muscle memory, right? I think it's important.
I agree. Couldn't agree more.
I think that's actually sometimes even more important than like actually looking at the
dude. Really
like,
shitty. Get it in. Just 60 get it up. Second review.
Get it up.
Get in, get out.
Get it up. Open up that folder. Get that VOD up.
Yeah, I love that. And that's what answers the second question. How long should the reviews be? At the start, really short, right? Just get it out there, you know, review the basics, move on. Sorry, well, I'm talking 1 to 2 minutes at the start. And then, you know, as you start to maybe develop that skill, I would say no more than 5 minutes.
Yeah, even
five
when you're an experience, you want to be getting it in 5 minutes or more.
And by the way, even if you haven't finished a review, you should end the review
in
5 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
Like literally cut it off. Stop.
Stop. Pause, I don't care if you haven't finished.
Get out. Go play. Play a game.
Play a game. Get the games in because you're just going to go down. Again, you're going to try and to like you're solving like
because you'll get more efficient
with like one VOD.
Exactly. What do I know? What if I don't know what to look for? Again, I think it ties back to what we spoke about before. We've got deaths. We've got first 8 minutes. Look at your first 8 minutes. I mean, observe. Okay, look at your trades. I mean, you can talk from a jungle. I'll talk from a mid perspective. First things to look for in the first 8 minutes, your first reset, first two resets. How are the quality of your resets? Trades. How are your quality of your trades? Pick a handful of trades. This trade was shit. This trade was shit. This trade was shit. Okay, why? Explore them. Explore those handful of trades. That's first 8 minutes. What about first 8 minutes for jungle?
Gank quality. Every fail gank review. Why did it? What are the factors why it didn't work?
And then, I mean, outside of that, that's where you can also use the exploratory review process or feelings-based review process where you're just picking, you know, three or four things that just felt uncomfortable.
Yep.
Or if you know objectively were big, and then use that micro-macro framework. Moving on to the next question. What if I can't find any mistakes? What would you say to that one, Nathan?
You're not being curious enough. You're not looking deep enough. I would say that would be surface level stuff versus root cause. I would say that you're not realizing what the word mistake might look. So it might be you're not like making like the obvious mistakes, like dying or something. Like, let's say you're going for a game with zero deaths. I did a review today that really good score just popping off. He brought it to review and I said it was a great review to bring to. I think it was like 8-1 as Bri, but so much inconsistencies in the decision making. You got to look, did this decision make sense? Was it high percentage? Because you can get away with a lot in a League of Legends game. You can get lucky, really lucky. So I would be really questioning the information and did you just get lucky in that situation?
I would also say as well, go to moments that like it might not involve you, but other teams, it's like, well, your laner just roamed bot and got a double kill. Did you contribute to that situation? You were late to that. You weren't at this Rift Herald fight and your team lost Grubs. Or you lost Grubs or Rift Herald. Why were you not there? You lost the first three dragons. Why did we lose the first three dragons? You weren't at that team fight in mid. Why? You know what I mean? So maybe you didn't die and it's not obvious what you did wrong. But I would explore those key moments into the game and see, could you have been there? Were you late? Did you mess up a reset? Did you contribute to this situation in any way? Did you have to burn flash somewhere? Why were you losing prio? Like, these are the sorts of questions or things that you could maybe look for. But I would also say, let's say, for example, you come out of a game and you feel like you played really, really well and you won the game, don't over-review that game. That could just be a lucky game. The stars aligned. It was really easy. Move on as well. I think there is such a thing as over-reviewing games that were just successful.
Yeah.
You know, as well.
Brings me to another question here. Do I review wins or losses?
I mean, it's always both, right?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a funny question, isn't it? You know?
I think reviewing wins is important because you're sort of breaking that pattern of your brain because people think that they're like winning games and if that they just do what they did in that game. They'll keep winning games. But what you did in that game wasn't maybe that good. You just won. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, I, you know, obviously there is a correlation between you doing good things and winning the game, but like, you can do the right thing and lose.
Yeah, but again, it's like sort of breaking that. You got to break it. I think Ruben Wins breaks that narrative or that thought pattern that like, I win that game, so I'm playing really well.
Yeah.
Like you and I, we review our wins and they're like end of reviews. I mean,
It's equal. There is zero difference in my mentality reviewing a loss versus a win.
Absolutely.
Identical.
Yep.
Like I don't even think about it. I don't even look at the end of the game.
The end
like,
result means
I literally, when I'm finishing a game, I'm thinking about what were the key things
pure
I did.
Pure learning mindset. Yeah, like it's generally psychopathic how student mindset we are because that's the only way.
It's the only way it works. It's the only way to improve.
Because you will just get, that's how you, I think that's generally how you get stuck flat out. You just don't review wins in my eyes.
It's a huge one.
Massive one.
You're not curious and you're not trying to figure out what's replicable.
And your thought pattern around what a win and a loss means is distorted.
Yep. I think it's pretty fair to say. What if I'm making the same mistakes over and over and over again? It just means that you're either doing surface level reviews, you're not getting to the root cause problem, solution. It could also mean you just don't have enough reps. Muscle memory, not enough muscle memory developed.
I think it's important to, so this depends. So if you're making the same mistake, you would have to define what the same mistake, like if you're on a learning objective and you can't figure it out, you actually talked in the other episode, just move on to the learning objective. But remember, you're going to maybe sort of fix it a little bit, but you are going to make that mistake again. Like again, league's not just like, cause there's so much going on.
Everything's on a scale.
Yeah.
Right. You're always just league's a game of percentages, right? And the way you want to view it is like, okay, well I'm like maybe 8 out of 10 there in terms of this skill. It means 80% of the time, if I'm in this center situation, I'm going to execute it well. Right. You want to think of it like that. There's never black or white. I either know it or I don't. It's
A good example, a good analogy here, Curtis, is like a boat. It's got like holes in it. Mm. You're constantly like hitting, and then that tape gets worn out, and then it just starts going. You know, like you're constantly like trying to fill the holes. Tape up the holes
for sure. Yep,
that's sort of way I think about it.
Yeah, so I think that there are a few things. So high quality questions, and that's if you really are making the same mistakes over and over and over again, then it could also be time where you need to get perspective, whether it's from your friends or from a coach or whatever.
There's the one there that says, I can't fix my mistake. There's just too many mistakes. That's just going back to you're over-reviewing games at that point, right? Let's just choose a couple, focus on them.
Legit true things.
Yes. Because yes, you could break down a gold game and I could write like 20 things or 30 things that is wrong with this.
Yep. Just pick one or two things, boom, and then start to maybe set yourself a learning objective. How do I ask high quality questions? I mean, that's kind of what we've been talking about today, right? How did I contribute to the situation? What would this situation look like from the enemy's perspective?
I think we've given you guys a massive list of high quality questions you can be asking, like specific tools, review tools as well.
What do bad reviews look like? Focusing on your teammates' mistakes. Do you want to start this one?
I mean, I've seen a lot of bad reviews like this. It would be like, if this person did this better, the game would look different. If people are very good at this, specifically when they're looking at a last team fight of the game, because that is technically the moment that could have gone. They latch onto it. You'd latch onto the specific last team fight of the game. We saw that all the time in the Nice case study, Curtis. Yes. Right? He had a very poor review.
That was a bad. That was one of the narratives we had. Yeah, that's right. The bad reviews are essentially you have this idea. So, okay, there's many types. Let's say one type is where you latch onto a belief that you had in the game. So your belief might be, okay, my jungler is shit. So everything your jungler does, you're looking for reasons why you're losing the game because of your jungler. And so when you go into the review, you're just now looking, just going to all, look, see, I told you, this guy's so bad, he's ruining my game. You're just trying to confirm the belief or the narrative that you had in that game.
The way that I think about that is, you know, in like those like police TV shows and stuff, they have that spider web of like everything has to point to that guy. Mm. And they've got like, they'll like do a bunch of sticky notes going to like that. Like that's the way I think about it. That's a review process that people have. They're trying to confirm a narrative that they had about the game.
And it could even be a champion.
Yes.
It's like, this is the reason I always lose.
I'm going to show you why Kassadin is the best champ in the game.
Yep. You can make any belief, any narrative come true in the post game review if you want it to, right?
Yeah, reviews can be incredibly dangerous when you put it that way.
They can be,
can't they? Yeah.
And so I think that that's the most common one, that like latching onto an idea, not being curious and open minded. Bad reviews as well, not taking responsibility, shifting blame to other people, not looking at how you personally contributed to the game, not focusing on things that were in your control.
Leads it to another question, Curtis, or what we've talked a lot about in our ranked guide is, when's the best time to review? Do you review straight after the game? Do you review the next day? I think the answer is that when you feel like you can be objective or emotional, you know, sometimes you might be just feeling like, okay, I'm just here to learn, right? Sometimes, even for me, I'm just like, okay, I'm just here to learn. I don't care if I go 0-3 in a block. I might have a 0-3 block. I'll be pretty pissed off because it's like the way the game went. So I'm like, okay, I got to review later or the next day. That's because you just got to be as objective as possible so you can look at reality.
Yep, I think it's well said. I will say that reviewing before blocks from your block the day before is very effective if you can do that.
Mindset sort of, yeah.
But yeah, usually the El Clasico is in between games, but sometimes you're not ready for that. Sometimes you're like, you know what, I got to step away. I can't review this game objectively. I'm just going to play another game and then review these later on. And that's fine. You can do that if that's what you need to do. You got to do what you got to do. Far out. There's just so much. It's overwhelming.
We sort of just scraped the surface of review.
We scraped the surface of a lot.
Good overview, though. It was a good overview.
We're very, very good overview.
So I think this is an episode that needed to be done, Curtis.
Yep.
Usually we do our Curtis Clip mailbag, but and some in the Reddit post, but I think today we'll skip that out.
It's a very long one, yeah. And I'd love to know, what are some... You know, if there's additional questions
let us know.
That you feel like we didn't maybe touch on enough or things that you wanted to hear from us, let us know, because then what we can do in the next episode is doing maybe another segment kind of covering, okay, the remaining questions that we didn't get to get around to this time, because I think there's a lot here, way more than we thought. We probably should have made this a two-part episode, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So let us know. We tried to spitball throw a bunch of shit out there for you guys to have a think about. Get the creative juices flowing. Let us know, though, if there's anything you want us to cover.
All right.
Cool.
Looking forward to hear from you guys. Good work. Let's keep on improving and learning the skill of reviewing.
That's right.
And we'll see you guys next week.